Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 So we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 56. Text 1. Has the introduction been read yet? The introduction to this chapter? No? Okay. So we'll start with that. Chapter 56. The Shamantaka Jewel. This chapter describes how Lord Krishna recovers the Shamantaka Jewel to allay false accusations against him and married the daughters of Jambavan and Satrajit. By enacting the pastimes involving the Shamantaka jewel, the Lord demonstrated the futility of material wealth. When Sukadeva Goswami mentioned that King Satrajit offended Lord Krishna on account of the Shamantaka jewel, King Parikshit became curious to hear the details of this incident. Thus Sukadeva Goswami narrated the story. King Satrajit received the Shamantaka gem by the grace of his best well-wisher, the sun god Surya. After fastening the gem to a chain, which he then hung around his neck, Satrajit travelled to Dvarka. The residents, thinking he was the sun god himself, went to Krishna and told him that Lord Surya had come to take his audience. But Krishna replied that the man who had come was not Surya, but King Satrajit, who looked extremely effulgent because he was wearing the Shamantaka jewel. In Dvarka, Satrajit installed the precious stone on a special altar in his home. Every day the gem produced large quantities of gold, and it had additional powers of assuming that whenever it was properly worshipped, no calamity would occur. On one occasion, Sri Krishna requested Satrajit to give the gem to the king of the Yadus, Ugrasena. But Satrajit refused, obsessed as he was with greed. Shortly thereafter, Satrajit's brother, Prashnena, left the city to hunt on horseback, wearing the Shamantaka jewel on his neck. On the road, a lion killed Prashnena and took the jewel away to a mountain cave where the king of the bears, Jambavan, happened to be living. Jambavan killed the lion and gave the jewel to his son to play with. When King Satrajit's brother did not return, the king presumed that Sri Krishna had killed him for the Shamantaka jewel. Lord Krishna heard about this rumour circulating amongst the general populace, and to clear his name he went with some of his citizens to find Prashena. Following his path, they eventually found his body and that of his horse lying on the road. Further on, they saw the body of the lion Jambavan had killed. Lord Krishna told the citizens to remain outside the cave while he went in to investigate. The Lord entered Jambavan's cave and saw the Shamantaka jewel lying next to a child. But when Krishna tried to take the jewel, the child's nurse cried out in alarm, bringing Jambavan quickly to the scene. Jambavan considered Krishna an ordinary man and began to fight with him. For 28 days continuously, the two fought until finally Jambavan grew weak from the Lord's blows. Now, understanding that Krishna was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Jambavan began to praise him. The Lord touched Jambavan with his lotus hand, dispelling his fear, and then explained everything about the jewel. With great devotion, Jambavan gladly presented Shamantaka jewel to the Lord, and together with his unmarried daughter Jambavati. Meanwhile, Lord Krishna's companions, having waited 12 days for Krishna to come out of the cave, returned to Dvarka despondent. All of Krishna's friends and family members became extremely sorrowful and began regularly worshipping Goddess Durga to assure the Lord's safe return. Even as they performed this worship, Lord Krishna entered the city in the company of his new wife. He summoned Satrajit to the royal assembly and, after recounting to him the entire story of the Shamantaka jewel's recovery, gave the jewel back to him. Satrajit accepted the jewel, but with great shame and remorse. He went back to his home, and there he decided to offer Lord Krishna not only the jewel, but also his daughter. so as to atone for the offence that he had committed against the Lord, Lord's lotus feet. Sri Krishna accepted the hand of Satyajit's daughter, Satyabhama, who was endowed with all divine qualities, but the jewel he refused, returning it to King Satyajit. Really great story. This part. So text one. Sri Sukha Uvacha. Satyajita Svatanayam.
Satyajita Svatanayam.
Krishnaya Krita Kilbisa.
Krishnaya Krita Kilbisa.
Shamatake Namanina.
Shamatake Namanina.
Swayam Udyamya Dattavan.
Swayam Udyamya
Sri Sukha Vacha.
Sri Sukha Vacha.
Satyajita Svatanayam.
Satyajita Svatanayam.
Krishnaya Krita Kilbisha.
Krishnaya Krita Kilbisha.
Shamantake Namanina.
Shamantake Namanina.
Swayam Udyama Dattavan.
Swayam Udyama Dattavan.
Sri Sukha Vacha.
Sukadev Goswami said.
Satyajita. King Satyajit.
Swa.
His own.
Tanayam.
Daughter.
Krishnaya.
The Lord Krishna. Krita.
Having committed.
Kilbisha.
Offense.
Shamatakayam, known as Shamataka,
Manina,
together with the jewel,
Svayam,
personally,
Udyama,
striving,
Dattavan,
he gave. Translation by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. Sukadeva Goswami said, having offended Lord Krishna, Satyajit tried as best he could to atone by presenting him with his daughter and the Shamantaka jewel. There's no purport to this. There's no purport for a few, so I'll just read a couple of shlokas and stop at the purport. Verse 2 is Sri Raja Vacha, Sakrajita Kim Akarod, Brahma Kritsnaya Kilbisha, Shamataka Kutas Tasya, Kashma Datta Sutahare. Maharaj Parikit inquired, O Brahmana, what did King Satyajit do to offend Lord Krishna? Where did he get Shamataka jewel, and how did he give his daughter to the Supreme Lord? Sri Sukhavacha, Asit Satyajita Suryo Bhaktasya Pramanansaka Pitras Taimais Mani Pradat Sachatushta Samatakam. Sukadeva Goswami said, Surya, the sun god, felt great affection for his devotee Satyajit, acting as his great friend. The demigod gave him the jewel called Shamataka as a token of his satisfaction. Text 4. Satam biram minam kante brijajamono yata ravi pravisto dravakam rajan teja saha napolakshita. Wearing the jewel on his neck, Satyajit entered Dwarka. He shone as brightly as the sun itself, O king, and thus he went unrecognized because of the jewel's effulgence. Text 5. Tam viloka janadurat tejasa master dristaya devanya krishna bhagavate sasamusu surya sakrita. As the people looked at Satyajit from a distance, his brilliance blinded them. They assumed that the sun god Surya was here and went to tell Krishna, who was at the time playing dice. Text 6. Narayana namasteistu sankha chakra gadadharha damodara vishaktasha govinda yadu nandanana. The residents of Dwarka said, obeisances unto you, O Narayan, O holder of the conch, disc and club, O lotus-eyed Damodar, O Govinda, O cherished descendant of Yadhu. So here, this is an interesting point. When you read Krishna book and you read Prabhupada, how Prabhupada describes this section of the Shamataka jewel, Prabhupada describes how the residents are now addressing Krishna, and they were completely aware of who Krishna was, in that they encompassed all the different aspects of Krishna. He was number one, it says here, obeisances unto you, O Narayan. So they understood that Krishna was the Supreme Personality of Vishnu, an incarnation of Vishnu, beholder of the consciousness club, so he's the controller of the universe. O lotus eyed Damodara Govinda, so they knew that he was Govinda, the protector of the cows, little cowherd boy in Vrindavan. And then finally, O cherished descendant of Yadu. So they also knew that he was Vasudeva's son and that he was part of the Yadu dynasty. And so they knew in full who Krishna was. Nobody was in illusion as to who Krishna was. So then it goes on to say, Esha Atati Savita Tvam Dirikshu Jagatpate Man Musnam Gavishta Chakrena Nirnam Chakasam Tigu. Lord Savati, who has come to you, O Lord of the universe, he is blinding everyone's eyes with his intensely effulgent rays. And text 8. Nava nachiti te margam trilokam vibhavar shadha jatvatad gudham yasu dristum tvam yati aja prabhu. The most exalted demigods in the three worlds are certainly anxious to seek you out, O Lord, now that you have hidden yourself amongst the Yadu dynasty. Thus the unborn sun god has come to see you. And text 9. Sri Sukha Uvacha Nisama bala vachanam praha yasyam buja loka praha naso ravi deva satcha jin manina javal. Sukadeva Goswami continued, hear these innocent words, O Lotus Lord. Hearing these innocent words, the lotus-eyed Lord smiled broadly and said, this is not the sun god, Ravi, but rather Satrajit, who is glowing because of his jewel. Nearly there. Text 10. Satrajita svagriham srimat krit kustu mangalam pravistya deva sadhane mani visper navasayat. King Satrajit entered his opulent home, festively executing auspicious rituals. He had qualified brahmanas install the Shamataka jewel in his house in their temple room. So instead of Krishna, put the jewel there. Text 11. Dina dina swanabharan asto sa sajita prabho dukhi bi swa mali aristani sarpanhi vajayo sudha nashanti mayinas tatra yatraste bya archito mani. Translation, each day the gem would produce 8 bharas of gold, my dear Prabhu, and the place in which it was kept was properly worshipped and would be free of calamities such as fame or untimely death, and also of all evils like snake bites, mental and physical disorders, and the presence of deceitful persons. Purport. Srila Sridhar Swami gives the following Shastric reference concerning bara. Four rice grains are called one gunja. 5 gunjas, 1 panna. 8 pannas, 1 karsha. 4 karshas, 1 pala. 100 palas, 1 tala. 20 talas make up 1 bara. Sounds a lot. Since there are about 3,700 grains of rice in an ounce, the Shamantaka jewel was producing approximately 170 pounds of gold every day. That's one hell of a material attachment. So here we have this Shamantaka jewel. It's a pretty big prize to have, this sort of a boon from the sun god. But like all material boons, pretty fruitless to his brother, as we will find out later on. It says here in this verse, you know, that with this Shamantaka jewel, the worshippers would be free from calamities such as famine and untimely death, and would also be free of evils of snake bites and mental and physical disorders. And yet his brother took it out, and the first thing that happened is he got eaten up by a lion. So, anyway, that's the material world. So this Satrajit, amazing personality, he's living in Dwarka, Krishna's there, and he opts to worship this Shamantaka jewel, material opulence. So he was a show-off. He was showing off his opulence. Just look at me, I've got this Shamantaka jewel. We've done so many plays on this, and it's always really nice to be Satrajit. You know that? I've got the Shamantaka jewel. So he was a show-off. He was showing off his valuable jewel that he got from the sun god. He didn't come to Dwarka to see Krishna at all. I mean, he came there specifically to show off. He was a king in his own right, and so he came to show off. Let's see what I've got. And he was overwhelmed by this attachment to the Shamantaka jewel. I've got so much wealth. Prabhupada purports in the Krishna book that Satrajit was actually a less intelligent person because he's worshipping a material thing. And he was just out and out a base materialist. You know, he had the opportunity to worship the Lord. He was in the Lord's palace, in the Lord's city, but he preferred to worship this thing. He was self-centered. So a materialist, the definition of a materialist is that he's selfish. He wants to gratify his senses in this material world, and it's all for me. I want to enjoy. So this I want to enjoy mentality is not a chaste situation to be, and a devotee wants to be chaste. What does it mean to be chastity? To be chaste means to give up the enjoying propensity. The I want. I want to enjoy it. This is just for me. So we have to give up this enjoying propensity, and that's real chastity. So giving up means giving everything to Krishna. And sometimes that can be a hard thing. So we know that in the spiritual world, Bhakti and I were just listening to this really nice lecture of Srila Charidade, Srila Ridhananda Maharaj. And he was explaining that if we want to go to the spiritual world is full of opulences. This Shamantaka jewel is just like, that's just a rock out the back somewhere. It's nothing. You know, there are Chintamanis. I'll just read a little section from the Brahma Samhita in the text. But the spiritual world is all opulence, dripping with opulence, all beauty. Everybody there is beautiful, absolutely gorgeous, male and female. And everybody is involved in service with Krishna. So there's all opulence. And if we want to go to the spiritual world, we cannot be attracted to anything for ourselves. If we see a beautiful thing in the material world, the materialist straight away goes, "Oh, I think I can enjoy that. That's great for me." Or if there's something that can produce wealth, you know, deep in our heart we think, "Oh, that wouldn't be bad. 170 pounds of gold a day? What's the price of gold at the moment? Something like $500 an ounce or something?" So, but in the spiritual world, the beauty is unimaginable. So beautiful. Incomprehensible. I was just going to read this. You know, at the end of the Brahma Samhita, where it goes, Sri Akanta Kanta Parama Purusha Kalpataravo Drumabhumis Chintamani. You know that? It's such a beautiful, yeah. The translations, I won't go through the whole thing. I love chanting, that, especially that part. In the early days, Bhavananda Prabhu, who used to sing the Brahma Samhita quite a lot, at the end of it, he had a really good voice, and at the end of it, he would sing. Remember that, Gandharva? He would sing this Sri Akanta Kanta, you know? And it was such a melodious. Do you remember that, Devaki? How he used to. No one used to chant it just like him, and he would. Remember that? Where Bhavananda used to sing. Sri Akanta Kanta Parama Purusha Kalpataravu. And you just, wow! It's very operatic, actually. So the translation, and you could feel the translation when he was singing it. I worship that transcendental seat known as Swetadvip, where as loving consorts of Lakshmi, in their unalloyed spiritual essence, practice the amorous service of the Supreme Lord Krishna as their only lover. Where every tree is a transcendental purpose tree, where the soil is the purpose gem, all the water is nectar, every word is a song, every gate is a dance, the flute is the favourite attendant, effulgence is full of transcendental bliss, the supreme spiritual entities are all enjoyable and tasty. Where numberless milk cows always emit transcendental oceans of milk, where there is eternal existence of transcendental time, who is ever present without past or future, hence not subject to the quality of passing away even for the space of half a moment. That realm is known as Goloka. Only a very few self-realized souls enter into that world. So that's the spiritual world. That's where we, as devotees, are going. But, to give it up, we can't keep anything for ourselves. We have to give everything to Krishna. And when you have that, when you present it with that, it sometimes, because we're so conditioned, it sometimes feels very uncomfortable. When you go to the army, you know, you have to give up so many things, you know, when you are presenting yourself. You have to give up your outside, and people don't like it. They have to give up their haircuts. I remember in the 70s, when people used to have to go to the army for conscription, you'd have to shave your hair and cut your hair. And in the 70s, it was a very big thing to have long hair. And as men, I'm talking about men, and men were very attached to their long hair. Believe me, I know. And we used to look after it better than some of the ladies used to look after your hair. So when you go to the army, you have to give these things up. And that was the hardest thing for my friends who had to go to the army. To give up their hair was just like something. So, but if we want to join Krishna's army, we have to give up everything. And this material world, in this material world, the purpose of human life is to actually learn how to give up these things and how to actually offer everything to Krishna. And this is why we have a spiritual master, this is why we have the Shastras, this is why we have the Sadhus, to actually teach us how we can relinquish our attachment to these material things and give everything up. We can't just keep a couple of things in our back pocket or in the back room somewhere. We can't keep the good stuff and give away just the stuff that's not so good. We have to give everything up. Everything. And sometimes in the material world, we may get a windfall of something. You know, like how often is it that we as devotees sometimes contemplate, gee, wouldn't it be nice if we won Taft's lottery? You know? Wouldn't it be nice? It's, you know, we read in the papers, yes, Taft's lottery this week is $30 million. And we go, wow, that's huge. But we can't gamble. We can't take that step. So one time I had a dream. Yeah, Taft's Lotto was... Bhakti's laughing already. Taft's Lotto was $30 million or something, you know. I thought, wow, this is amazing. So I went to sleep, and in my dream, guess what? I dreamt all these numbers. 2, 22, 26. I woke up in the morning, I said, guess what, Bhakti? I dreamt the numbers for Taft's Lotto. And I was so convinced that we were going to win Taft's Lotto. But we couldn't buy a ticket. This is gambling. We'd be breaking the principles. What do we do? I said, I was thinking, what do we do? I said, I know. I'll ring up my brother. He can gamble. So I said, hey, Tony, I just had this dream last night. But you know, we can't gamble. But these numbers, I'll split it with you. So, sure enough, he bought the ticket. All that day we're thinking, right, $30 million, you know. What are we going to... Well, first of all, we'll buy a unit in Mayapur. Should we give something to our spiritual master? Yeah, how much do you think we should... Then there's some devotees at the temple. Yeah, they really... And then this over there. And we were allocating it out and everything like this. So, the balls dropped and... We didn't win. So this was Krishna's trick. Sorry? Not one number. Bhakti just laughed and laughed and laughed because I was so convinced. We got it! It's in our hand, baby! So, but we dream of these windfalls. And in essence, if we were to do the right thing, we should give it all to Krishna. If, you know, because sometimes we have it that we may have a windfall. You know, somebody may leave us something as an inheritance and so on and so forth. There's some devotees in Sydney, actually, that won $1 million and handed it all over to Atmaram Prabhu. There we go. Use it as you like. Could we do it? Could you do it? It's interesting. I was trying to figure out, in our process of working out, you know, how we're going to allocate our so-called $30 million windfall, how I was going to split this up. I was trying to figure out in my mind how I could justify having a Harley Davidson fat boy. I'm thinking, how can I utilize that in Krishna's service? Oh, I could do Sankirtan on it, it'd be okay. So in this way we were trying to figure out. So, but Vidyananda Maharaj gives the example how in this lecture that we were listening to, if a person is working for a company, you know, and part of you know this one, Harshan? No. In this scenario, a person's working for a company and he has the job to take $1,000 or take the company's money to the bank every day, and it starts off that you've got to take $1,000 to the bank. Then the next day, you've got to take $10,000 to the bank. Now it's cash, and there's hardly any record of it. So if you wanted to, you could head off to Greece and hide in some back street somewhere in Greece, like a current figure in the news. And every day, this money goes up, and up, and up. Then it's $10,000. Then it's $100,000. You're carrying this, right? It's all cash. It's in your pocket. Then it's $1 million. Then it's $10 million. And Maharaj was saying, what is the point where your virtue breaks down? What is the point where you say, ah, forget it, I'm off. Acapulco, here we come. This is the same with material energy. What is our price? What are we willing to give to Krishna and what are we willing to hold back? And the point is that we have to offer everything. We can't hold anything back whatsoever. It has to be offered to Krishna. Now the devotees, we're not like any other movement in the world, quite frankly. The Hare Krishna movement is not like any other movement in the world, in that we utilize everything for Krishna. There's that classic example of Srila Prabhupada. Obviously everybody's heard of it, but I just repeat it. There, at the time when Prabhupada was preaching, there was this Swami, you know, and he had a poster up where people were offering him money, and the poster was of this Swami going, nope, I do not want the money. And Prabhupada saw the poster. You heard this? And Prabhupada saw this poster, and Prabhupada said, you can take my photo and offer the money, and I'll be going like that. Because Prabhupada will utilize every cent given to him in the service of Krishna. So as devotees, we come in contact with so many different opulences. So many different opulences. Especially when we become devotees. As materialists, we may have some opulences, but when we become devotees, actually some talents and some abilities that are dormant as non-devotees become to full. You know, and so devotees may get wealth, devotees may get fame, devotees may get beauty, but how they use it is what determines how surrendered they are to Krishna. So they have to engage these things in Krishna's service, and that is where we have to make the proper adjustments. That's where our consciousness has to be placed in correct position. So we can adjust and give everything to Krishna. So the cars that we utilize, the facilities that we have, we utilize them properly. And the example are the acharyas. If Prabhupada and his descendants show us how to actually utilize everything in the service of the Lord and deposit it all in Krishna's bank account. Give it all to Krishna. Don't hold anything back. Don't hold anything back. It's not that we think, yeah, you can have everything. But deep in the recesses of our mind, there's something that Krishna just ain't going to get because it's just too good. And so this is what we have to come up with. We have to give Krishna both the good and the bad. Everything. Just hand it over. Krishna, this is yours. When we come in to a temple room, the whole process of offering obeisances, laying flat. Krishna, you can have me. We can't hold anything back. And this not holding anything back is real Krishna consciousness. Just giving everything to Krishna. So the good news is, most in the material sort of sense, when we talk to non-devotees about this, they can't understand. You know, like we talk to our family members, you know, when we join the Hare Krishna movement. Yeah, 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 we've joined the Krishna movement. Yeah, we're giving everything to Krishna. What's the first thing they say? Oh, no, don't do that. Hold something back, you know. You can't do that. It's so hard for them to understand that just to give everything. So the thing is that materialists feel that if they give everything away, they're going to miss out on something. But the good news is, in Krishna consciousness, you don't miss out on anything. Not on anything. Rupa Goswami gives the example of watering the root of a tree. So when we water the root of a tree, what's the symptom? What happens is that the branches, the trunk, the leaves, everything gets nourished by the watering of the roots. So we're the branches and the twigs of Krishna's tree. If we offer everything to Krishna, guess what? It comes back. It comes back to us. Similarly, there's the analogy that Srila Prabhupada makes. If we are a servant in the king's palace, then we also enjoy the opulences of the king. I mean, who has a breakfast like the Hare Krishnas? You know, with all so many lovely offerings. It's Krishna's prasadam, you know. When I first came to the temple, I was blown out. What sort of a place is this? That they have so many preparations and vegetables. I mean, I was used to Weet-Bix and toast and Vegemite, you know. But here you came to the Melbourne temple with Korma as the chief cook, and there was sabjis, there was khichdi, there was halva, there was Boston buns, there was this and that for breakfast. And I thought, my God, this is like living in the king's palace. So there's no bad news. It's only good news. And it's going to come back, and we can be assured of happiness. And we can see this in the process of even just offering prasadam to the deities. It's a simple process. Just offering the prasadam, we make a plate of foodstuff, and we know that in 20 minutes after we've offered it, we're going to get it. Isn't it? One day we might be surprised and not come. But that's not the attitude we should have. We should just have that attitude of just giving to Krishna. But as a devotee, after you've been a devotee for a period of time, you actually start to appreciate how Krishna reciprocates with his devotees. And the happiness that you have just being in the association of devotees, just the happiness that you get from spiritual realization, just the happiness that you get from the knowledge that you're gaining from Krishna consciousness, far outweighs any materialistic happiness that may be out there. Any shamantaka jewel that may be kept, out there. You know? I mean, again, we can make comparisons. When we first came to Krishna consciousness, my parents were very upset that we became Hare Krishna devotees. I had a good budding career as an artist, and Bhakti had so many opportunities to make it in the big wide world, just like my brothers and sisters. One was an accountant, one had his own business, one was this, one was that, and they were making many, many shamantaka jewels. And here we had Bert and Mary, and they weren't going to do this. And my parents were very upset that materially we weren't going to be looked after. The funny thing was that after a period of time, and time tells everything, there were divorces. There was dropping their religion. There was affairs. There was trouble with business. And there was disputes between them all. And my father and mother turned to us and said, actually, out of all of them, you guys are the most happiest. And you haven't got a thing except your Krishna consciousness. So this is, even to a materialist can see that the devotees are actually really, really happy. But their happiness doesn't stem from something material. It comes from spiritual enlightenment. Now this sincere offering can only be done with faith. Faith, this is a word that's bandied about a lot. Faith, shraddha. Sradayam bhajate yomam. Bhakti Bhagavad Gita explains that faith, if a person has faith, real faith, that's the highest yoga, and from that highest yoga one can attain knowledge. Now knowledge is, to gain that knowledge we have to have trust in Krishna. We have to trust Krishna that actually if I give everything to you, am I going to be safe? Is it all going to be okay for me? And we have to have firm conviction. We have to actually make the endeavor. Alright, I trust you, Krishna. Yes, I love you. I will follow. I will give everything to Krishna. Not hold anything back. And if we exercise this, and over the years if we give even those anartas, those little unwanted things in our heart that we've kept, if we give them to Krishna, then actually what happens is Krishna empowers us. And the more we give, the more Krishna empowers us with spiritual energy. So it is incumbent upon us to just really increase our giving propensity and search within ourselves what are those unwanted things within our heart, what are those things that we're holding on to that we can also offer at the lotus feet of Krishna. So when we have that, then our life becomes empowered, and actually that is the higher taste that we experience in Krishna consciousness. That is the higher taste. The happiness that we get in our Krishna consciousness. So with confidence that Krishna will make it okay is how we go on with our life. That we don't doubt Krishna. That we have firm faith, shraddha, that whatever happens to us, I'm offering everything to Krishna, good or bad. I know that He will look after me. I know that we will be okay. Everything will be alright. And Krishna guarantees that. But we have to have this faith and confidence. We can see that faith in His divine grace, Srila Prabhupada. He's given us that example. Just recently I had the opportunity of reading that book. What's it called again, Maliki? That book that I just bought? Your Friend, Always Your Friend, or... That, A Friend to All. A Friend to All. It's the one that Harisori Prabhu was talking about. And it's the life of Prabhupada before he became the ISKCON founder Acharya, before he went to the West. And it's taking interviews of all the associates and friends that Prabhupada had before he went to the West. The conviction, the absolute trust that Prabhupada had in Krishna all his life is amazing. Srila Prabhupada was in a marriage situation where his wife was not interested in Krishna consciousness. Can you imagine us as devotees, grihasthas, if your wife or your husband was just not into Krishna consciousness and you felt that attraction for Krishna and was like a loggerheads every single day? He had to do his arati and offering. All the food was offered in his room. He couldn't have any deities. He only could have pictures up. And so he would offer his arati and everything in his room. Every day he worked for his family through the pharmaceutical business, and he ran a successful pharmaceutical business for a period of time. Every day Srila Prabhupada chanted 64 rounds on the instructions of his spiritual master. 64, not 16, 64 rounds. Every day Srila Prabhupada would do his worship. Every day Srila Prabhupada would write something for the Gaudiya Math distribution. What an example. And every day, Prabhupada had the confidence that Krishna will make it all right. Everything will be okay. He had been given the instruction at a very early age to preach in English to the Western world. years back, for 30 years or something, Prabhupada was meditating on this. This is what my Guru Maharaj wants me to do. This is what I'll do. And every time he was thinking, how can I do this? How can I do this? But he knew that he was going to do this. And when you read some of the accounts of how Prabhupada interacted with his different friends and godbrothers, how he would always be saying, I have to do this for Guru Maharaj. There's actually a really interesting thing which really moved me. The instruction of Bhaktisiddhanta to Srila Prabhupada to spread Krishna consciousness to the Western world in English was so important to Bhaktisiddhanta. Do you know why? Number one, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhaktisiddhanta's father, asked him that we should, and it was Bhaktivinoda Thakur's desire that Krishna consciousness spread all over the world. And he tried. Bhaktisiddhanta also tried. But do you know why it was so important to him? Actually, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's wife, Bhagavati, is it? Yeah? On her deathbed, she got Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj to come, and she made him promise her on her deathbed that you will do whatever you can to spread Krishna consciousness in English to the Western world. So this was his mother, Pure Devotee, telling Bhaktisiddhanta, I want you to do this. So he did this as best he could. And he sent out his people to England and all over the place. And those sannyasis came back and they weren't so successful. And one time when they came back from England, they had this Pandal program, or this program, and all the sannyasis were sitting at the front who had just come back from England and Europe, and they weren't successful. And Bhaktisiddhanta was preaching how it was his desire that this happen and this goes on. And there's one account where he looks like the Grihasthas weren't considered very palatable in those days. They weren't given that much recognition. And so the Grihas were over in some corner over in the back there. And Bhaktisiddhanta Ulabh Maharaj, when he was talking about the necessity to actually preach Krishna consciousness in the West, he stopped and he wasn't looking at his sannyasis anymore, and he started to look over in the Grihastha area, and Abhay Charande was standing in the corner, and this other gentleman was saying how Bhaktisiddhanta's gaze was fixed on Srila Prabhupada, and saying, we have to teach in the Western world. And Prabhupada took that so to heart. 30 years, in all the calamities that Prabhupada had to go through, so many years waiting for the time that he could execute the order of his spiritual master, and knowing with confidence that Krishna will make it okay. So this is the conviction that we need. This is the confidence that we have. In the Western world, it's so easy to say, quit. You know, we get a lousy job, I'm going to quit. That's no good. You know, isn't it? Isn't that the mantra of today? You know, you work somewhere, that's, you know. Or somebody asks you to do something, that's too hard. Yeah, you do it for a week or so, that's just too difficult. You know? It's, how's it described? Modern society is like fast living, low thinking. So everything is just, it's all too difficult. So similarly it is with our spiritual life, with our surrendering process, with our giving everything to Krishna. You know, it's just too hard, Prabhu. You know, we have this scenario, it's just too difficult. But actually, that means we don't have faith in Krishna. We haven't got the confidence that actually Krishna will make everything okay. The spiritual master and Krishna are telling us what we should be doing. It's all laid out for us. It's so clear. Prabhupada has made it so clear. Our spiritual masters are making it so clear. Krishna is making it so clear to us. All we have to do is just practice it. Chant 16 rounds. Okay, don't make it 64. You know, 16. Can you manage that? It's so hard. It's so difficult. I can't chant. How long does it take? 16 rounds to chant attentive rounds. An hour and a half? I can't give an hour and a half in my day. How often is that the case with us as devotees? We're holding something back. What's that thing that you're holding back that you think is so important? What's that little Shamantaka jewel that you've got in your back pocket for? That you can't give everything to Krishna. Prabhupada said our lifeblood is this chanting. We have to chant. We have to concentrate. We have to focus on the holy name. We have to meditate on Krishna. We have to learn to love Krishna. It's imperative that we give everything to Krishna. So at least give an hour and a half of our time in our chanting to Krishna. So that is our connection. And that, if we follow that direction, if we follow that conviction, if we have faith and trust in Krishna, what happens is that we become spiritually happy. We become spiritually surcharged. Now, we know that Satyajit had his little altar set up and everything with the Shamantaka jewel there, and he was worshipping it and it was producing gold and all that kind of stuff. In a sense, the devotee has the greatest gift, the greatest gem that's been given to us by causeless mercy. Prabhupada has given this freely to everyone. Our movement is a movement of giving. We just want to give to everyone. You know, as soon as we experience that little bit of happiness, the first thing we want to do is just give it out. We've got the panacea. We've got the remedy for the material disease. And all as devotees we want to do is just give it out. So one thing that we have to do in the altar of our heart, we also have to recognize the gift that we've been given. Recognize this incredible gem that's been given to us by the Acharyas, by Srila Prabhupada, by our Guru Maharaj. And actually take note of it. Worship that gem. How do you worship that gem? By recognizing it, by seeing it. At a program that we had recently at our house, the Vaishnava Sangha program, we were talking about the importance of actually writing down our realizations. I can't stress this enough. In our Krishna consciousness, it is imperative that we write down our realizations. Every single day, make a spiritual journal. Make a spiritual diary. How have I given things to Krishna today? What have I given to Krishna? What have I let go of? What am I holding back still? Analyze your Krishna consciousness. Who have I spoken to about Krishna consciousness? What ecstasy have I experienced today? Do you analyze that? When you analyze it, when you actually draw it, when you draw remember the different feelings and ecstasies that you've had, that makes your realizations concreted in your consciousness. If you don't write these things down, Prabhupada was always writing. If we don't write these things down, we forget them. Like one time, speaking of a dream again, I was fortunate enough to have a dream of Srila Prabhupada. But I didn't write down that dream that I had of him. Prabhupada says if you have a dream of your spiritual master, it's actually that the spiritual master has come. And it was a whole involved dream of some instruction and stuff like that. And I told Bhakti the next morning, you know, and Prabhupada came. I was elated, you know. And all I remember was the Prabhupada was rubbing my head saying, it's all right, it's okay. But he gave some instruction. And because I didn't actually make the point, I should write this down. Now it's 5 or 6 years later, and what was that dream again? Yeah, it was a Prabhupada. And he was right. But if you write things down, you go back to it, you visit your little altar, where your spiritual gem is there, where your Chintamani is there, and you analyze, how have I experienced this happiness in Krishna consciousness? Oh yes, I remember how in this kirtan we were elated. And oh yes, I remember when I was preaching to this non-devotee, this materialist, and he was enlivened. Oh yes, I remember when I was preaching to a dying person and they passed chanting the holy name of the Lord. These remembrances are incredibly important to us. And we have to write them down. So this spiritual journal or diary is like our impetus to look for more as well. Because sometimes we become lackadaisical and devotional service just goes on a roll. Yeah, Prabhu, horrible. You know, we're chanting our hours with it. And we're not picking up the subtleties anymore. We're not picking the nectar which is coming from Krishna different, you know. So if we actually make a point and analyze, okay, what happened to me today, spiritually? Don't worry about the material stuff. That's irrelevant. But spiritually, what happened today? I saw the deities. The deities were dressed so beautifully. Someone led the kirtan. Gosh, I really felt ecstatic. That sort of thing. If you keep writing these things, they become solidified in your heart. And then we have more and more confidence in Krishna, more and more trust in Krishna, more and more faith in Krishna, and ultimately we become totally Krishna conscious and we fully trust Krishna and we just throw up our hands in ecstasy. Take me, my Lord. I just want to be with you. So that is the direction in Krishna consciousness. This is what we should strive for. And we've been given the greatest gift. So I'll stop here. Has anybody got any questions or comments? Hare Bhagavan.
Like sometimes we can observe that devotees try to give everything, but
yep.
It seems like it's a little prematurely in the sense that
yeah.
They don't give it unconditional and
yep.
They expect so many things in return and then somehow that doesn't come and then there's some bitterness, some frustration. You know, often you hear people say, oh, I've given my best years to his plan. Now I have to look after myself, you know.
Yeah.
So and so, you know, it seems like we cannot just everything,
no.
It seems like it's a gradual process, you know?
It is indeed. And we're very fortunate because also the early years there wasn't anybody really to guide or direct us. But nowadays there are older devotees and people that have been in the movement for a little bit longer that when a person is asked to surrender to Krishna and, you know, like, I'll just chuck in my job and I'll just be a full-on Hare Krishna devotee, and actually, there are now processes by which we say, hey, hang on a tick, just wait just one moment. You can be just as Krishna conscious, maintain your job nicely, do this and that, and you'll have the same effect. Don't do everything in one hit. It's individual, but there are checks and balances. You know, there's Guru Shastra and Sadhu. You have to take advice. You're absolutely correct. And so sometimes we're a bit gung-ho and we need to get some direction as to what to do. Yeah, Bhakti?
Another idea that some of the past teachers explains the process of the giving, that actually the understanding of giving is that you actually know that it belongs to you.
Yes, oh, that's right.
If you have an understanding that it doesn't belong to him and you're giving,
yep.
Then it's false renunciation.
Yes, that's right. Phalgun Vairagya.
You know,
that's
like,
right.
Like if you're giving, but there's a resentment because it's not yours to give in the first place.
That's
it's
right.
Actually his. You have to come to an understanding that it's his. That's the point of renunciation. That's the point of giving. The understanding that it is Krishna's. Because if you have some understanding that something is not Krishna's, that's when you think you can have it.
That's right. That's a very important
right.
point. Thanks, Mike.
Because otherwise what you're doing, and that's the same also like during that class, I had that realization of, you know how we say we have to be fully engaged in Krishna service. So what does that actually mean? Because if your heart is not in the process, you're actually not giving yourself fully. Because
that's right.
You know, there's some part of you that's resenting the doing of that process of that service. So if your consciousness is not fully there, it's actually the only thing that you can give to Krishna is your consciousness,
yep.
Your awareness that it belongs to him. And that everything that exists is his,
is.
That I'm his, and like that.
Yep, that's a very good point. Thanks. Yes, Manaji?
My experience is that faith in surrender, it actually overcomes the fears. So as long as I surrender.
Can you repeat that? Did everybody hear that as well?
Well, my experience is that my faith in Krishna, you know, to surrender actually. That's the whole tool in the overcoming my fears.
Yep.
Yeah. Like faith overcomes fear.
Yep. Very, very good point.
Yeah.
Yes, Melody?
About being personal, this was such a wonderful class of renunciation giving up. Have you ever thought of rolling up your mat and going to the forest and sending back to you to the woman's ashram and giving up your car and house and giving it all to
That's a good point. Okay, Buck, we'll make that arrangement this afternoon. Is that okay? No. Because actually, our house is not our house.
Yeah, it belongs to Krishna.
It belongs to Krishna.
Yes.
And this is actually a very good point. And it's incumbent upon all grihasthas to actually understand that, like Bhakti was saying, everything belongs to Krishna.
Bhakti belongs to Krishna. Doesn't belong to me. The house belongs to Krishna. Everything. My car belongs to Krishna. With that attitude and utilizing everything in service to Krishna. You know? And Prabhupada says that if you make your house a temple, then Vrindavan is everywhere. So there's no need to be a false renunciate. It's with knowledge you renounce. And so whatever ashram you're in, you know, you work with the understanding that everything belongs to Krishna, and let me utilize everything in Krishna's service. So not yet. We're not packing up shop yet. Mataji?
Where you were talking about, like, Gaurakshul Prabhupada, and then you were talking about writing.
Yeah.
So I just thought, maybe if you could just quickly tell everyone about the importance of writing a homage to Srila Prabhupada.
Oh, right.
Because
that's coming up, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a point of gratitude. I mean, if a person has an iota of appreciation of what the gem is that you've been given, the time is now to express that gratitude to His Divine Grace in a Vyasa Puja homage. And it's imperative that we do that. And take time out. Don't just do something where, oh God, it's the homage tomorrow. Yeah, Srila Prabhupada, Namo Om Vishnu Padmaya. Yeah, we thank you very much. It was really good. Thank you. Go over your journal that you've been writing every day, or go over and actually analyze what Prabhupada has done for you. Take the time to actually properly address His Divine Grace and express your gratitude to Him. You know, how you've been saved. I mean, as I was reading from the Brahma Samhita, that's our home. That's where we're all going to go. I'm looking at all your faces now in front of me, but in due course of time, you guys are the guys that I'm going to be playing with in the spiritual world. We're all going to have a really great time. There is no doubt about that. Do you ever look at your God brothers and sisters and say, my God, we're going to be in the spiritual world with Krishna together, guys? This is a fact. Do you believe it? It's the truth. So get used to it. Because these are the guys that you're going to be with in the spiritual world. And we're all going to have a hell of a good time. You know? Just it's not a lie. These are things that the acharyas are pointing out to us. We think that this Shamantaka jewel is the be-all and end-all. Oh yeah, if it can produce 170 pounds of gold. It's not our goal. You know? But if we share with Krishna, if we give everything to Krishna, He'll give us everything. And that's our due, that's our lot, that's our heritage, that's our inheritance. And we've been given that opportunity by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. So we've got to write that to Him. And writing that comes from the heart. Any other comments at all? Yes, Prabhu? Haribol, how are you?
One of my friends visited my house last week. He's not a Krishna conscious person, but he is a Hindu person,
yep.
Indian. And in the discussion, so we were talking about, you know, so we have to retire at some stage, right? He said, I know he was investing some money in something like properties and other things, and I know that at that time. Now he said, now I'm financially independent, any day I can retire if I want to do something else, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Then I said, I also have the same intention to retire, to do some extra work in this devotional aspect of it, things, but I can't do that because I didn't save money, right? I can't retire. He said, because you didn't work for it, you didn't get it. He made a comment. Then I said, okay, no, because my conscience is not there's no force enough to do that kind of investment, that's why I didn't do it. He said that what Krishna said, if you do it, He will see, look after your result, right? You didn't do it, that's why Krishna didn't give it to you. Right? Important what Krishna said is He never said that He will do it for you. He said that you do it, I will give the result. You didn't do it, so you didn't get it. Krishna you didn't give the opportunity for Krishna to give the result because you didn't do it.
He said that, didn't he?
He said that, then for a minute I got confused. What he's telling me is also...
What did you say to him? What?
How do I interpret this?
Yeah.
That's a question.
Okay. Again...
I'm at this stage now. I can't... I am not financially independent to be retiring. to do something else what I wanted to do.
Mm.
Right? I had to spend maybe whatever 8, 10, 12 hours to work and things.
Yeah, yeah.
But he is in a position to retire because he acted something and there is a result. But there is a positive result, but there can be a negative result. You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's a different thing. What his statement telling me that is because
You
work and Krishna could see the result.
Some preparation work has to be there. And even the Goswamis, you know, who are wealthy people, put some money aside for their... So there has to be some intelligent understanding as to what has to happen. But in the ultimate end, you have to rely on Krishna. Again, an example that was given in Prabhupada's life. Prabhupada was a grihastha, and he had his responsibility for his family. And this is a thing that often, you know, in a sense, as a devotee, you sort of wonder, how could Prabhupada have left his family and become a sannyasi? You know what I mean? This was such a concern to Srila Prabhupada. You know, he was happy to do his Krishna consciousness as a grihastha and organize, okay, something for later, something like this. But then he got a dream where Bhaktisiddhanta had come to him and said, I want you to take sannyas. And Prabhupada ran to Sridhar Maharaj's mutt and knocked on the door in the early mornings and said, I've just had this dream. He was elated, because it was a reality, that Bhaktisiddhanta has come and he wants me to take sannyas. But I'm in a confusion, how can I do that? I have my family, I have my business, like that. I cannot do. And so Sridhar Maharaj was actually saying, look, everything will be alright, it'll be worked out. Don't make any move on that yet. So some time passed, and again Prabhupada had the dream of his spiritual master. But this time his spiritual master said, everything will be okay. So Prabhupada had faith in Krishna and in his spiritual master that everything will be alright. And he came to Sridhar Maharaj again, I've got to take sannyas. This time there was no doubt at all. And so he said, now wait a minute, don't go off straight away. We'll have a bit of a talk with some of the other devotees and see what we can do. Understanding that the life that Prabhupada was living as a grihastha was not conducive because they weren't supportive at all for his preaching. So then Sridhar Maharaj made arrangements with Keshava Maharaj, who was later going to be Prabhupada's sannyas guru, and Pishima. Pishima was Prabhupada's sister. And she was married and she had 7 sons who were quite wealthy. And Prabhupada again brought up the point, what about my family? And Pishima said, no, don't worry about this. This is not conducive to what your mission is later in life. I will take care of your family. So she actually looked after the household. She gave funds from her sons so that Prabhupada, in a clear consciousness, could go and do the preaching. And then he took sannyas from Keshava Maharaj. So yeah, it's a question of both using intellect and conversing with the other Vaishnavas to see what the right direction is. But if you make some preparation, that's good. So Prabhupada is the example. Is that... Yes, Melody?
Just one quick comment. Also, we have to remember that our Krishna consciousness is not dependent on being retired or not retired.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
good point.
Easily we think, now I cannot fully practice because I have these
duties,
and if I could just give them up, then I could practice. But no, you know, devotional service is independent of any material
formation. Yep.
Yeah, and you have to have faith that Krishna will look after you. Mataji, over there. Yep.
I've noticed that if Krishna wants you to do something, like he will be ordered to do something, that if he doesn't want you to do something, then it is not creating circumstances. We are just servants of the circumstances, and Krishna, not, we cannot create them. So we have to choose the best in our situation. I know when I was starting to look after Tulsi, Mataji, she didn't have any choice, and I had to accept it because she didn't have any choice. But I didn't want, because I never looked after any plant in my life. I felt I'm not going to be enough responsible and able to do it. But then, because she didn't have anyone, I accepted it. But then Krishna gave me everything what I needed a lot. He gave me the advice, he brought me people who were advising me, helping me. And I thought, oh, Krishna would have only to say yes.
Yep. So you accept the good and the bad, that's right. Even if you don't understand how that's coming, but yeah. Yes, Bhakti?
Yeah, I was thinking as far as exactly the point that we can make, that your Krishna consciousness is not dependent on the material situation, and also there may be so many things in our lives that we go through, but there's actually a reason why we're going through it, and that later on we actually get the hindsight and the realization to understand why we went through those things in those situations in order to help evolve us as individuals and as devotees to come to a different perspective and to understand that, okay, and that's why I went through those difficulties, because now it's made me see business and business. So it's not a question of, you know, I need to be in a particular situation before I can do that. It's understanding that devotional service is in the present.
Yep.
You know,
right here, right.
It doesn't rely, you know, there's no hankering or lamenting. It's now.
Yep.
It's not reliant on, oh, I wish I should have done that, or I could have done that, or I'm hoping that I will be able to do that in the future. It's now.
So. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.